It's Thursday, the 3rd of October, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today,
we must have a new relationship with the EU, a positive and confident partnership, and we can do it. And today in Brussels, we are tabling what I believe are constructive and reasonable proposals, which provide a compromise for both sides.
With Brexit just weeks away, Boris Johnson says he's the man with a plan to fix Westminster's almighty mess. Will assess his chances with Tony Blair's former communications boss, Lance Price. Plus, Russia moves to boost the appeal of its passport. Berlin's long-delayed new airport readies for takeoff. And China's Communist Party prepares for its most important gathering of the year. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now.
Yes, this is a compromise by the UK, and I hope very much that our friends understand that and compromise in their turn. Because if we fail...
It's just 28 days until Britain is due to leave the European Union. But there are just 16 days until the Prime Minister is, by law, compelled to ask the European Union for an extension to that deadline. Now, Boris Johnson says he's got a plan. But is there really any hope that he can achieve, in a matter of days, what's eluded Westminster for the past 3.5 years? Lance Price was Director of Communications for the former Prime Minister, Tony Blair.
We will, under no circumstances, have checks at or near the border in Northern Ireland. We will respect the peace process and the Good Friday Agreement.
Well, he's certainly put together something which is significantly different to the deal in terms of the Northern Ireland situation and getting rid of the so-called backstop. So there is something of substance there to be discussed. But he's going about it in a very strange way. If he's hoping to secure a deal, in that he's handing it to them and saying it's, you know, this is the final offer. As far as I can tell, it's the first offer. So that is a very strange way to go about negotiating. And of course, they're also going to be looking at the political situation back at home. And there's no point in making an offer if he can't be confident and can't prove effectively to the European Union, the other nations of the European Union, that he has the support in the House of Commons to actually put it through.
And by a process of renewable democratic consent by the Executive and the Assembly of Northern Ireland, we will go further and protect the existing regulatory arrangements for farmers and businesses on both sides of the border.
So we could find ourselves in a situation where, come October the 31st, Boris Johnson has to decide either it's his words and he does apply for an extension, or the government applies for an extension and maybe he doesn't do it personally, whatever, or he allows somebody else to take over and lets them do it, because the long game, or it's not that long a game, it's a fairly sort of medium-term game, is all about the general election that will follow all of this and how people will respond to that and who they'll hold responsible if it all goes pear-shaped.
We will allow the UK, whole and entire, to withdraw from the EU with control over our own trade policy from the start.
The one card he has, and the reason they're still cheering him in Manchester at the moment as he makes his speech, is that they believe he's a winner. They look at the opinion polls, which show that despite all the chaos here and all the disarray and the fact that this is a totally dysfunctional government, they are significantly number of percentage points ahead of the opposition in the opinion polls. And they believe that if Boris Johnson gets his chance to fight Boris Johnson, the representative of the people, against the establishment, which includes Parliament and the courts and everybody else who doesn't like what I'm trying to do, that he can win that.
Then let us be in no doubt, conference, of what the alternative is. The alternative is no deal. And that is not an outcome we want. It is not an outcome we seek at all. But let me tell you, my friends, it is an outcome for which we are ready.
Russia is considering a plan that could boost the profile of its passport. Lawmakers are mulling a new bill that would allow foreign workers to become dual Russian citizens. Monocle's Melkon Charchoglian has the story. Mel, what is the current situation for foreigners working in Russia?
So at the moment, as with any foreigner even visiting Russia as a tourist, if there are sort of legal obstacles to getting a visa, a lot of paperwork, appealing to embassies, it's not, you know, it's not the streamlined online process that you get with certain countries. Whereas, you know, if you're in the UK and you're working here, there's a very realistic possibility of acquiring a British passport, which would open up many doors. You know, if you're not already a member of the EU, or, you know, if you don't come from a country such as Canada or the US, you have to apply for visas if you're going on holiday somewhere. The British passport, for example, dispenses with all of that, making it very attractive. So my only issue with this story is that even if one becomes a Russian citizen after a long period of time, it's unlikely to give you any benefits. It's one of the worst passports as far as opening doors goes. You know, you can go to Syria and you can go to China without a visa, but not many people go to those places on holiday. I think this is a drop in the ocean, and what Russia really needs to do is create stronger diplomatic ties. If you're Russian, you can go abroad easily without needing a visa. If you want to go to Russia on holiday, you shouldn't have to fill out a bunch of paperwork. It should be all done online. That's the step that they really need to be taking.
So obviously it's part of a broader aim here, and part of that will be to make the Russian passport simply more attractive overall. But as you say, Mel, globally speaking, it's not a very powerful document to have. What do you think this tells us about the broader ambitions behind this kind of bill?
Well, I think Russia is historically a place of emigration. You know, for example, Israel has a huge population of former Soviet subjects, many of them, you know, Russian Jews. And I think Russia is trying to bring people back. So apparently figures are up hugely on last year by about 22% on foreigners becoming Russian citizens. And that's probably people from Ukraine, again, from the former Soviet Union. So I think they just want to reverse that process. But for example, I'm a Russian citizen and a British citizen, but I never use my Russian passport. It has absolutely no advantage. So Russia might be trying to attract people back and stop this massive flux of people out of the country. For example, London, huge Russian population. But that's step one of what needs to be a far greater endeavour.
We'll keep our eyes on that far greater endeavour then as it continues. Melkon Çajoğlu, thank you. To Germany now, where the failure to launch Berlin's new airport has drifted well beyond the realm of farce.
Berlin-Brandenburg Airport has become an embarrassment for Germans. It was meant to open in October 2011, but has faced a series of delays and budget overruns. However, after a successful operational test of Terminal 1, it looks like the airport will indeed open in October 2020. The biggest hurdle, fire protection concerns, seems to have been overcome. A spokesperson for the airport says that most of the technical problems have been solved. The main challenge is a transformation of the terminal building into an airport that's ready to operate. That includes the acquisition of approximately 20,000 volunteers for testing processes like boarding and checking in. The final report of the assessment is due at the end of this month, but the result is expected to stand, even if it will be a great relief for Berlin to finally have the airport it deserves. It will be sad to see the charming, if old-fashioned, time capsule that is Tegel Airport replaced.
Finally today, Monocle's editorial team looks at the coming storm in Beijing as the Communist Party prepares for one of its most important gatherings of the year.
China is on holiday this week, and over 1 billion people are basking in the glow of Tuesday's National State Military Parade in Beijing, or just genuine sunshine. On WeChat, plenty of patriotic posts about the prosperous new China are being sent from exotic beaches in faraway foreign lands. Socialism with Chinese characteristics, or capitalism to the rest of us, has been a triumph for a lot of people. But everything is far from golden for the leadership in Beijing as they get back to business. This month, the Communist Party will hold its most important meeting of the year, and the forecast will look gloomy. A slowing economy, compounded by the U.S. trade war, means the economic growth can no longer be taken for granted. Employers are becoming anxious about hiring, and some companies are shedding jobs. Beijing needs to produce 15 million new positions each year, simply to satisfy university graduates and rural Dick Whittingtons flocking to the city. Premier Li Keqiang is encouraging everyone to become an entrepreneur, but financing is getting harder to come by. Startups find it tougher to raise capital, while small businesses struggle to get bank loans. To free up positions, expats are being nudged towards the exit, and young foreign talent struggles to get work visas. Some graduates are still, however, returning home from overseas with fancy foreign degrees, only to find themselves cutting hair. Mass unemployment is one of the Communist Party's biggest existential threats, and no amount of made-in-China military hardware can eliminate that threat.
That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Rylan. The Monocle Minute returns on Friday.